I'd like to introduce our next speaker. She's Daisy Anarchy. And everybody give her a warm, loud welcome.
I'm really grateful to be here today. You guys in Santa Cruz have it going on, as they say, as a bisexual anarchist sex worker who has fun with BDSM and is an incest survivor and a ritual abuse survivor. Why, there's just, you know, this is it for me today. I'm really proud of all the fabulous work you guys are doing here in Santa Cruz. It's nice to come here and see that you guys are doing all this work. I'm going to start out with a poem and then kind of do a little bit of sex work 101 and then open it up for questions. And the poem is called, I Deserve to Be Safe. I deserve to be safe, whether I am a nun in a convent or a street corner hooker in a rundown inner city neighborhood. I deserve to be safe, whether I am saving it for marriage or selling it at a price you can or cannot afford. If I am selling it, I deserve to be safe, regardless of just how much of it I am selling, be it only striptease you can look but don't touch, or good old-fashioned half-and-half honey. If I am selling it, I deserve to be safe, whether I am selling it to one sugar daddy or as many takers as I can catch. If I am selling it, I deserve to be safe, whether I am selling it in the classiest brothel in the county or on the street where the cheapest hoes in town work. If I am selling it, I deserve to be safe, whether I am the health food, earth mother, goddess whore, or the most desperate, strung out, junkie toss up. Anarchist though I am, I believe I deserve police protection. Whether I'm getting paid to teach your child kindergarten or getting paid to suck your dick. I deserve police protection, whether I am your wife or the hooker you see when you tell your wife you're out watching the game with the boys. I deserve police protection, regardless of whether I give it away or sell it, because I deserve to be safe. I deserve respect, whether I am your mother who nursed you and changed your diapers, or the whore you pray your mother doesn't know you're with. I deserve your mother's respect, too. I deserve respect, whether I'm in a nurse's uniform, or a stripper's pasties, or a hooker's miniskirt. I deserve respect for the hard work I do, whether I pay my rent with money earned, working in the factory, or working on the street. I deserve respect for the hard work I do, whether I buy my groceries with money earned, cleaning your house, building your house, or fucking you. My life is precious. My life is precious. Whether I am the daughter you cherish or the hooker you fuck who is only as old as your daughter. My life is precious. Whether I comfort crying children or comfort the sick and dying or comfort you sexually and emotionally. My life is precious. Whether I am the wife who slept with only one man her entire life, or the hooker who loves her job. My contribution to society is valuable. Whether I am cooking you meals, engineering solar power, creating beautiful works of art, or giving you sexual pleasure. My contribution to society is valuable. Whether I am dancing in the ballet or in the sleaziest strip club in town. I deserve to be safe. I deserve police protection. I deserve respect. My life is precious, and my contribution to society is valuable. Don't be surprised when I expect safety and protection and respect, for I know my life is precious, and I know that my contribution to society is valuable. The souls and lives and dreams of 100,000 beaten, jailed, and murdered prostitutes are righteously avenged and finally freed by this hooker's expectation of safety and protection and respect, and my knowledge that my life is precious, and my knowledge that my contribution to society is valuable. Give this gift to yourself, beloved sisters. Share this gift with our family. With this gift of loving self-respect, righteously avenge, finally free a weary world of beaten, jailed, and murdered prostitutes. May we all live free in the glory and joy of life that every human being deserves. Thank you. We have had, and we still have, a lot of fucked up laws in this country, you know, and in the world, but I'm going to talk specifically about this country right now. You know, segregation used to be legal. Interracial marriage used to be illegal. And before those laws changed, there had to start to be a shift in the culture. You know, the attitudes and the racism behind those laws had to start to be challenged. And we know that racism still exists. But for the laws, those heavy-duty racist laws, to start to be overturned, there had to be enough of a shift in the culture, enough of a challenging of racism in the culture to start to, you know, challenge those hardcore racist laws. We're seeing the same thing with homophobia. You know, there are all these homophobic laws in our country. You know, we're right in the middle of what, to me, this is an exciting time, you know, challenging the illegality of gay marriage. And we've seen that to even get to this point where we've got going on what we have going on at this moment, like all the marriages happening in San Francisco and a few states, you know, allowing gay marriage, and the overruling of the sodomy law in Texas, it's taken decades of fighting of the gay rights movement, and we're seeing a gradual shift in the culture. You know, people getting braver about speaking out against homophobia, for these laws to have to, you know, to start to crumble. And it takes decades, you know, for racist, homophobic, sexist, classist laws to change, you know, but again, it's the culture behind it. You know, and I hope everybody in this room, you know, if you hear somebody speaking, you know, talking really racist shit, hopefully you challenge that. You know, even if you're a white person, you hear another white person using the N-word, hopefully you challenge that and let them know that's not okay. But, you know, it's taken a long time of a cultural shift for people to get more empowered to fight racism culturally. And the same thing with homophobia. Hopefully, you know, of course, here we are at Gender Funk, but still, if you're out in the world, you're around a lot of straight people, and somebody starts laying down a lot of homophobic shit, you know, oh, faggot this, dyke that, hopefully, at this point, you feel empowered, you know, to challenge that. You know, and I want to talk to you about how often you hear people say, oh, that fucking whore. Oh, she looks like a whore in that dress. You know, oh, well, I heard that she's sleeping with this person and this person and this person. She's a fucking whore. You know, and what I'm coming to is that we've got these laws in this country, you know, in most countries in the world, they have laws against prostitution. And I believe in the decriminalization of adult consensual prostitution. And I believe for that to happen, we need a cultural shift. We need a huge cultural shift that is a long, hard struggle. Because I'm sure just like everybody in this room right now has, even if you're like white and you don't have to deal with racism the same way that people of color in this society have to deal with racism, you still get confronted with it. You know it's still there, and we are still having to fight it all the time. Same thing with homophobia. I feel like the sexism of the stigma against prostitution is still so deeply ingrained that many people still aren't empowered enough to challenge it when it comes up. And I think a lot of people aren't even conscious of how deeply ingrained that is. I mean, you know, a lot of times when you're watching TV and there's a really racist depiction of an African-American person, you're just like, ugh, you know, or we'll notice it if there's like really fucked up depictions of queer people, but you know, quite often in popular culture, there are really fucked up depictions of sex workers, and I think a lot of times, a lot of people, maybe even people in these rooms, you know, people just accept it. Like, oh yeah, you know, most prostitutes are, you know, maybe they're just totally psychologically fucked up from abuse that happened in childhood, so they're just acting out on their abuse, or maybe they're just like totally fucked up on drugs. There's so much sexism around prostitution in our culture that I think a lot of people don't always even recognize it. Our culture is so inundated with it. And I think that a lot of times people aren't empowered to call it. You know, if your girlfriend says to you, oh, that makes you look like a fucking hooker, you shouldn't wear that, I mean, I know, like, a lot of people in this room are familiar that you get a lot of judgment if, you know, you look too much like a dyke. You know, it's like, okay if you don't wear makeup, but don't go too much over there. It's the same thing, well, like, okay if you wear some makeup, but don't go too much over there. It's all about controlling women. You know, you can't wear too much, you can't wear too little, they want you to look like this, you know? You gotta be within the norm, you know, whatever it is that is supposed to be whatever the popular culture at that moment wants you to be, rather than whoever you feel you are. And so that's something that I'm trying to talk about more, just to challenge, just to get people thinking about the sexism in this culture in their day-to-day lives, you know, in the language that we use, in the sexism in popular culture that surrounds us, that allows the criminalization and the stigmatization and the violence against prostitute women and also against women seen as prostitutes. I really believe that the prostitution laws are a form of social control of women. They're a huge tool of the patriarchy globally. You know, in some countries, honor killings are legal, where if a woman is thought to have been alone in a room with another man, maybe, you know, they're not even saying that they had sex, well, then the family will support that woman being killed because she dishonored her husband, you know. Heavy-duty social control. Well, it's all about, like, well, she wasn't being, you know, true, or she wasn't, you know, just, it's all about that woman being owned by one man. And with the prostitution laws, I feel like it's the same thing. It's like, is, you know, if a woman is, if I owned my own body and I could have sex for free or for money with anyone I wanted, why is that such a threat to the patriarchy? It's like, I could have sex with every person in this room for free. You know, we could get a bunch of condoms and dental dams. It might take a while, but I would not go to jail for it. As long as everything was consensual between all of us, I would not go to jail. But if everybody here, if I said, okay, I'll have sex with everybody who wants to consensually, you know, for X amount of dollars, the first time I did it, say it was totally consensual, totally safe, say that me and the person exchanging the money totally loved each other, we could still go to jail. Me and the person, you know, giving me the money, but the person that really probably would go to jail is me, the person, you know, providing the sexual service. And it's, so it's about sexual control of women. I really feel that it's about the patriarchy controlling women, but it's also about class, you know, because a lot of women, there's such a stigma against prostitution, and you're put into a situation of being exposed to so much more violence if you are working in the sex industry because of the stigma and because of the criminalization of prostitution, that many women who might choose to work as prostitutes don't choose to do it. Even women that might want to have sex with a lot of people. You know, I know a lot of women that, you know, they like to go to the Power Exchange in San Francisco and have sex with a lot of people for free. And they would just be so pleased if they could openly put an advertisement in the paper and not have to worry about the vice cops, you know, that spend like 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, plus overtime when they can, going through all the advertisements in the paper, looking on the internet, never to mind the girls on the street that they bust, you know, trying to track them down and entrap them into soliciting them for prostitution so that they can then throw them in jail. But then there are all these women that end up working in prostitution, not because that's the career choice that they necessarily, it's not their first career choice, it's not because they necessarily like to have sex with a lot of people, but because they have to pay the rent, or they have this bill or that bill, they need the money for whatever reason, you know, and it's the economic decision that they make at the moment, whether it's for one night, or one month, or a few years, or a decade. You know, maybe even it's for a couple decades, and it's not necessarily the first career choice that they might make, but it's the economic choice that works for them to allow them to do whatever else they need to do in their life. You know, whether it's pay the energy bill, you know, that they're getting jacked by PG&E or Enron or whoever, you know, that's like so expensive that they have to pay so their electricity doesn't get cut off at their house, pay their rent so they don't end up out on the street, or maybe they are supporting themselves in the sex industry so that they can do their art, you know, or maybe there's something else that they like to have their time, they want to take back their time, as much time as they can, you know, for something else in their life, so they choose to do sex work. And just like in every other segment and every other industry in this society, racism, you know, plays into it. You know, if you're an African-American person, it's so much harder to get to the top of whatever industry it is because of the racism in this culture. If you're an immigrant person or a person of color, it's that much harder to get to the, you know, the safer, higher-paying places in sex work. You know, we saw in The Lusty Lady how the management of The Lusty Lady, the old management, because now, happily, The Lusty Lady is not only a union shop but a workers' co-op. So a lot of the safer places to work in the sex industry are, say, for example, the only places that we have legalized prostitution in America are the brothels in Nevada. Then you have, like, all the strip clubs. You know, those places are usually run by white men with a lot of money, you know, and all white men with a lot of money in the United States of America that own businesses are not always known for being anti-racist and having anti-racist hiring policies. So it can be a lot harder if you're disempowered because of race or class or immigration status to get into those safer, higher paying places in the sex industry. So what happens is a lot of people that are disempowered by racism or immigration status or sometimes homophobia, you know, you want to work at a certain indoor house doing prostitution, but like the person that runs it thinks you look too much like a dyke, even if you wear that wig, they don't like your tattoos or whatever, you know, things like that can force you, you know, you end, if you want to work in the sex industry or if you have to work in the sex industry for whatever reasons, you end up working out on the street, you end up working in areas where you're more vulnerable to violence from the police, because we know that, you know, the police routinely sexually assault women before taking them to jail. And arrest and incarceration, I believe that incarceration is a form of violence. It really is. The, you know, being violently taken away from your family and your loved ones, you know, the malnutrition, you know, not being able to care for yourself in the ways that you need to care for yourself is all an act of violence. And there's this whole school of women out there that would like to save us poor, drugged out, fucked up prostitutes that just need therapy. And so they think that, oh, it's so good that that there's intervention and the police must come and save all us poor hookers and throw us in jail for our own good so then we can be forced to go to their programs. In San Francisco, there's this program called SAGE, and they have women that... it's run by a woman that used to be a drug addict when she was out on the street, so her experience of prostitution was really fucked up, because if you have a drug problem that's chaotic and out of control, whether you're working, I'm working as a nurse at the hospital. Well, if my life is out of control because of my drug use, my experience as a nurse at the hospital is going to be really fucked up compared to what it was if my drug use wasn't completely chaotic and out of control. I'm not going to have the type of boundaries that I might necessarily want to have if, you know, my drug use wasn't out of my control, et cetera. So this woman that runs this program, Sage, she has decided that all prostitution is this horrible, fucked up thing that happened to her when she was out on the streets, you know, totally strung out on drugs and not being able to take care of herself. And when her experience was that when she went to jail, oh, that saved her from her drug addiction. So now she's totally working with the police, helping them to arrest all these women, put them in jail, and then they go to her program where they're getting, quote, services where, you know, it's drilled in, you know, I mean, they're just shamed so horrifically, you know, for what they do. And it's like this whole attitude that like, oh, these poor sick women, you know, we need to help save them. And I think that's really disempowering. I mean, it's as the voices get stronger for the complete decriminalization of adult consensual prostitution, this whole thing of like, oh, we've got to intervene to save these poor women, to give them services, the police are just like really pushing those women that are saying that out front. Because those women are going to help the police keep on doing. I mean, these women are literally working hand in hand with the police, you know, around arrest and incarceration of prostitute women. And I think that that's something that's going on right now, that people that are not working in sex work or haven't worked in sex work but want to support sex workers and want to support the movement for sex workers' rights really need to be aware and conscious of, not to get sucked into that whole thing of like, oh, these poor victims, we just need to give them services. Well, you know, we all are victims of capitalism. And some people are also victims of sexism and racism and homophobia. And, you know, some sex workers are victims of sexual abuse, but, you know, so are some nurses victims of sexual abuse. And arresting someone and putting them into jail and, you know, malnourishing them, you know, separating them from their family and their loved ones, separating them from decent medical care or whatever the things that they need to do to take care of themselves, and then forcing them into this program where you're going to try to help them figure out why they were acting out in this really fucked up way, you know, is not, in my opinion, it's not really help. So that's something I've been trying to talk about, too, because in my activism for sex workers' rights, you know, who I'm really out there for, I'm not just fighting the totally sex-negative people. You know, the voices that I'm really fighting right now, too, when I'm out there politically fighting, are not just those people that just hate whores, because there's lots of those people. You know, we're seeing a lot of the, you know, those really homophobic assholes coming out of the woodwork right now that, you know, living here in Northern California, sometimes we just, you know, we take for granted that, you know, I take for granted as a woman I can walk down the street holding my girlfriend's hand, and I forget how much hate there still is. You know, well, as the sex worker activist, you know, I've seen a lot of the hate against just the sexist hatred against hookers and sex workers that there is in the world. And I see it from women as well as men, too. But who I'm really having to fight right now are these women that are working hand in hand with the police, saying that, oh, we've got to intervene and save these poor women, put them in jail. And the other thing that they're doing is they're like, oh, really talking about all these women that are getting trafficked. Well, immigration, prostitution has been a tool of immigration, you know, as long as immigration has been happening. I mean, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of women of European descent, their great-grandmothers used prostitution as a tool to immigrate to the United States, to escape domestic violence, to escape poverty, you know, just as a tool to try to take control of their own lives. And right now we're in this political climate where it's, you know, immigrants are just getting cracked down on so much harder. And yes, some women do use immigration as, do use prostitution as a tool of immigration today, and working as a prostitute here in the United States might be the best choice for them, you know, that they have consensually made, you know, that they might see as the best choice for them, you know, to escape whatever they're escaping from, or to come over here. Maybe they're leaving some third world country, you know, where our, you know, American multinational corporations are ripping off and impoverishing their country and everybody's working on starvation wages. Well, maybe they can come over here and fuck the guys that are, you know, running those corporations and get some of that money and fucking send it back home to their families that are working on, you know, for starvation wages back on those plantations in third world countries, you know, and maybe that is the best choice for them. Well, some of these women that are trying to save prostitutes are now trying to save all the trafficked women. Occasionally, some women are trafficked by force, and that is fucked up and totally horrible. But with the criminalization of prostitution, what happens, and them saying, you know, acting like, oh, all these women are trafficked against their will, is they recently in San Francisco, they had bus of, I think there were like four different houses of where Asian immigrant women were working, doing prostitution. And you know what? And these women, you know, the interventionist women, you know, were like hoping that, oh, they would get them in their program and, you know, give them services or whatever. Well, a lot of them got taken by Homeland Security. You know, what happens to a lot of these women when they get arrested by the police is they go, you know, it used to be called INS. They would go straight into INS hold, get held indefinitely. What they would do is sometimes if we could, we'd start trying to get them legal help to get them protection under the Violence Against Women law, and the INS would send them out to prison in Fresno where we couldn't get them legal help, where they get held until they were deported out of the country. So, I mean, that's another thing. You know, there's all this. It's great to fight against coercion and violence against women, but I think it needs to be done within the context that the prostitution laws themselves are a form of international violence against women. And in our fight against violence against women and coerced prostitution, we have to make sure that we're not feeding into, you know, other forms of violence, including the form of violence that, you know, the Homeland Security system is, that would just like to deport any immigrant woman. You know, quite often women are accused of being prostitutes and put in jail when they're not even prostitutes. There's the famous case of Yvonne Dobson, who was a nurse, who was an African woman walking alone through the Union Square District in San Francisco, and she was arrested for prostitution. Well, the police said she was an African American woman unescorted. She worked as a nurse for a living, but I mean, this is another thing about the prostitution laws, is that they put all women in danger, you know, of not just the violence of arrest and incarceration, but also the greater violence, you know, from violent rapists, you know, that think, oh, well, maybe she's just a hooker and I can get away with it. The Green River murders in the Seattle-Tacoma area, that was the largest serial murder case in the history of the United States. Until recently, most people hadn't even heard of it because most of the victims were teenage prostitutes and most of the victims were black teenage prostitutes. And so that's the other thing. Some people are like, oh, well, what about legalization if, you know, we have it all controlled? Wouldn't that be safer? No, because in Nevada is a good example of where it's, quote, controlled. And there you have to have, you know, lots and lots of money to buy a license to have a brothel. So usually these are straight white men, you know, that have the money to buy the brothels. And then the women are forced to stay there for a whole week. They can't, like, just come and go. There are all kinds of things about their working conditions that are just really fucked up. There's a lot of coercion that goes on inside the brothels. So that's why we're saying that we want decriminalization of all adult consensual prostitution so that women can make their own choices, so that you don't have to go work for some man that is going to tell you how to do it so that he can then also take his cut. And also because of the fact that there is racism in this culture, and most you know, African-American women in the sex industry have a harder time getting into the brothels and stuff, are therefore forced out onto the streets, are therefore victim to more of the violence of the whole criminalization against prostitution. So that is some information about why I think that there should be total decriminalization of all adult consensual prostitution. Another thing that I've been working on in San Francisco that I'll just touch on briefly is I have worked as a stripper for a long time in San Francisco. And I've worked as a call girl and I've worked on the street, but I also really like to dance and I was really enjoying working as just a dancer in San Francisco strip clubs. And many years ago, about 8 years ago, it was referenced in the Lusty Lady video. When Willie Brown became mayor, he used to be the private attorney of some of the dance club owners. And Terrence Hallinan became the district attorney. They started building all these private booths in the dance clubs. And now, rather than doing a dance out in the open, like, say this was the stage and that was the audience, you know, and if I could do a lap dance for you, everybody else in the room could see, that would afford me some protection. You know, because when I was working as a dancer, I just wanted to work as a dancer. You know, if I wanted to work as a prostitute, I know how to do that. I wouldn't be dragging my bikinis to some dance club, you know, trying to work as a prostitute in the dance club. But they built all these private booths, and now we were supposed to take the customers and go into these little private booths. And also, they referenced these illegal stage fees. Rather than paying us according to the labor law, they were making us pay them. It started out with $5, $10, $25. When they built the private booths, they raised it to $180 for 4 hours. You know, at a lot of the dance clubs in San Francisco, sometimes it can go up to $300, the amount that you're just supposed to give to the dance club owner. And the dance club owner started telling us to do things other than just dance. Well, I feel like, again, if I'm working as a nurse, you know, you shouldn't ask me to do prostitution for the clients. You know, if my job is just to be a nurse. If I'm working as an exotic dancer, you shouldn't ask me to do prostitution for the clients if I'm just working as a dancer. The whole point is yes means yes and no means no. But we've had this incredible, horrific political struggle over the last 8 years. The private booths, you know, women were getting sexually assaulted and raped in the illegal private booths. The police and the district attorney and the mayor and the dance club owners loved this because now they were cracking down on all the prostitution on the street. The vice cops doing, you know, they'd look on the internet and try to find some women advertising discreetly on the internet. One girl I know had, they sent like 10 cops out to bust like one call girl that had an advertisement on the internet that you had to look for her little ad. You know what I mean? But they're letting all this prostitution go on in the dance clubs. We actually organized and went to the police to ask for help years ago, and they refused to help us. And it's been a long, horrible struggle. I know I should wind up right now. basically, I feel like part of what has made our struggle in the dance clubs so hard, why it's been so hard to get the Labor Commission to enforce the labor laws and for us to get these workers' safety laws enforced in the dance clubs about the illegal private booze, is because if you work in the sex industry, you're considered a whore, so whatever happens to you is your own damn fault, seems to be the attitude, because you're a bad woman, because you're not playing by the rules, you know, because you're not marrying a man and doing what he tells you to and, you know, doing what society wants you to do. And it's been really, really difficult, and it still is difficult. But I'm very grateful that we have a lot of support from the unions and a lot of the different organizations. I am a member of Pride at Work, and they're very supportive of our struggle. Pride at Work is the LGBT part of the AFL-CIO. And not all the union, like the top of union officials, support us, but the rank and file does. You know, working class people in the labor movement get that this is a working class issue, and I'm very grateful to have all the working class support in the unions, and it's an ongoing struggle to get the, you know, top brass in the unions to totally support us. So I need to wrap up, but I just want to say again that I think it's great, all the work that you guys are doing here, and just to really take it out into your life with you. You know, that scapegoating and stigmatizing sex industry workers is not acceptable. And just like, you know, the laws that are based on racism are unacceptable, laws that are based on homophobia are unacceptable, laws that are based on sexism are unacceptable as well. That using the violence, you know, of our current so-called, you know, legal system against people, you know, doing consensual acts because you've got a few hundred years of patriarchy behind you is no longer acceptable. So thanks, everybody, for your support. She says I can take some questions. Did somebody, are there any questions?
Can you talk about the
serial murder case in the Green River Killers? In 1982, the Green River murders started happening. Within 4 years, there was already a women's coalition to stop the Green River murders in Seattle because so many, at that point, there was like already 60 women or so something that had been killed. And again, most of them were teenage black prostitutes that were working the street. So it was really a grassroots women's movement that in 1986, I went to a march in Seattle that was organized by the Women's Coalition to Stop the Green River Murders. They were mothers. They were, you know, family members of the victims. And you know, there was a lot of controversy about how the police were handling it. One of the Seattle police officers up there involved in the case said that they referred to the Green River Killer as a garbage disposal. And now, you know, it's been in the press in the last couple years that the person responsible for most of these murders confessed. Well, they had him in custody a couple times before, and they had family members coming forward about this man before. And I have an opinion about why they didn't take him seriously as a suspect or hold him in jail before. Because he was like a white, you know, middle-class American man who held a job, who was usually married. You know, he looked like he could be, you know, your white, middle-class, straight cop, you know. And the family members that were coming to the police about this man were people of color. So it's my opinion that it was racism and classism that allowed this man to, you know, keep on doing what he was doing for so many years, even though the, you know, people in the community were coming forward and identifying this man, and the police had him in jail a couple times, you know. So, and again, I think that if that number of white University of Washington college students you know, had, well, it never would have happened. They never would have let it get to that point. But again, I think it's the, it's also the prostitution laws themselves that empowered that man. You know, he made comments to the effect that, you know, well, he thought that he was helping the police do their job. Yeah, I used to work with some of the people that head the St. James Infirmary. The St. James Infirmary is a healthcare clinic in San Francisco that is supposed to be for sex workers. I have serious political differences with the people that run the clinic, and so that it probably wouldn't be tactful, or it probably wouldn't be a good use of time for me to get into those. You know, basically, I think you guys have heard what my point of view is. I think we really need to fight against police abuse and fight for the total decriminalization of adult consensual prostitution. And one of the things that has happened historically is people are always like, oh, well, those, we need to give those women services. We need to make sure they're getting health checks, because there's this stigmatization that, oh, all these prostitutes have venereal disease and they could be spreading AIDS and they could be spreading STDs, when that's really not the case. What is the truth is it is harder because of the stigma for sex workers to access health care and to come out as sex workers, you know, to their healthcare providers. But again, without going into all the details, I have serious political differences with the people running the St. James Infirmary, and I think that rather than buying into that whole thing of like, okay, let's just give these women that are getting the shit kicked out of them services, you know, I think we need to make sure that people, I think that people do need to, everybody needs to have good health care accessible to them, but I think we need to make sure that people don't get the shit kicked out of them in the first place, and that you don't hold hands, you know, with the people that are kicking the shit out of you, saying, will you help us, you know, get some services after you kick the shit out of us? You know, I think you need to stand united and say it is unacceptable to kick the fucking shit out of us in the first place. Any more questions?
Yes, are you aware of any struggles of transgender sex workers in San Francisco?
Yes, just like if you're a person of color or an immigrant person, you know, and you are disempowered because of racism, you know, or xenophobia in this culture, you have a harder time in the sex industry. If you're a transgender person, you know, you get the shit kicked out of you 10 times more by the San Francisco Police Department. I have, you know, I used to work at the Mitchell Brothers. I got out of work. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. All the bars are letting out. This cop is beating the shit out of a transgender woman on Polk Street. Now, I don't know if she was a prostitute or not. You know, the way he had her down, it was obvious to everybody that she was a transgender woman. But, you know, I think that because of the homophobia in our culture and the transphobia in our culture totally empowers the police to be extremely more violent to transgendered sex workers. It is, you know, just like it's harder to be a person of color in this society, therefore it's harder to be, you know, a black prostitute in this, you know, rather than a white prostitute. You know, just like it's harder to be a transgender person in this society, it's that much harder to be a transgender sex worker than, you know, a sex worker who's not transgendered. And, you know, I'm grateful to see there, you know, is a lot of attempts to work with the San Francisco Police Department around transgender sensitivity trainings, but the police are still so empowered to fuck with prostitutes that if you're a transgendered sex worker, or if they perceive you to be a transgender sex worker, we had one woman come to one of our organizing meetings who worked at a shoe store on Polk Street, where a lot of transgender women work, and she dressed fabulously and beautifully and very sexily, from her fabulous makeup down to her fabulous shoes, and she got arrested on her way to her job at the shoe store because the police were so sure that, oh, she must be a prostitute. So that, you know, transphobia, you know, totally impacts transgender sex workers as well.
How did they arrest her if she didn't solicit, or if they endured a solicitation entrapment?
They don't care. They will arrest you anyway. You don't have to solicit. If they decide that they want to arrest you and that you are going to jail, they are going to arrest you and you are going to jail. This is the United States of America.
Have you considered that?
Yes, but it's difficult because of retaliation. You know, women that come forward against the police, it's a very scary situation as far as retaliation.
I really like your analysis in sexism and gender and racism and classism and looking at prostitutes and sex workers. But I really did hear you mention what I wanted until the very end about trans sex workers, but also that there are very, very many men involved in sex work. I think that that's really important. And although I think the looking at sex work through a lens of sexism is essential, because that does give a lot of assistance in understanding where a lot of those stereotypes come from, then it has to go a little bit larger than that to gender bias, but also homophobia and racism and classism linking together to see how that impacts both men who work in the sex industry as well as trans people of all oppression shipment. I think that's really important, and not something to mention as well.
Yeah, I think that gay male identified sex workers in San Francisco that have the hardest time are the youth. You know, that are out on the streets, get a really bad time from the police. Most of the gay male identified sex workers that I know that advertise in, you know, some of the newspapers and advertise on the internet actually have the easiest time working. And I think part of it is because of the homophobia of the police. You know, that the police would rather be going, a lot of those straight cops would rather be going and fucking with the, you know, female or female-identified sex worker that they can get some free sex from, you know, before they take her into jail. And that's why the homophobia, as far as the police concern, mostly affects, I mean, the kids on the street have a really hard time with the cops. But thank you for that. Well, thank you so much. I'm very grateful for all the hard work that everybody here did to make this possible. Thank you.